everybody. Welcome to the Spill the OT podcast. This is your host, Robin. And I actually really want to get one of those little jingles made, like something where it's like, and welcome to the Spill the OT podcast, where we talk OT, PT, SLP, something like that. If anyone has any ideas, like if you are secretly a producer or you have any insight into how to create one of those, I would love to hear your thoughts. You can email me at spilltheot@gmail.com because, yeah, I feel like now that we're at season 3, we should up our fanciness level. And I feel like that would really bring us to the next level. So our interview today is actually about the skill of interviewing, and this is seriously just so informative. I love our guest, and she gave us so much great information that I have decided to split it over 2 different episodes. A little bit of housekeeping: episodes will now be released on a bi-weekly schedule. My aim is that this will allow me to post consistently, because I know that sometimes I just burn myself out like a shooting star, and then I try and do so much, and then all of a sudden I need like a really long break. Over the summer, I ended up taking a break that was supposed to be just a few weeks long, and next thing I knew, I took 2 full-blown months. So my hope is that if I can do bi-weekly, it will allow me to conserve my energy a little bit better, and therefore I won't need to take those long pauses. And hopefully, you know, I would love for each season to be at least 6 months long, if not 1 year long. Again, I'm not totally sure where I'm going with the podcast, but bi-weekly schedule is definitely what I'm thinking, and they will be released on Fridays. So that is my commitment as of right now. I also have so much going on different platforms. So I have created a YouTube channel. This YouTube channel is also still kind of being developed. I'm not 100% sure what direction it's going in, but it seems right now that a lot of OT students and pre-OT students are finding it useful. So if you fit into that category and you have certain questions that you would like answered, that's where I'm doing a lot of my more Q&A things. So you can follow me on YouTube, comment on one of the videos, let me know what you'd like to see more of, and the YouTube channel is Spill the OT. I also have a website. So the website is spilltheot.com, and I have a blog on there. And on that blog, you will find some of the most amazing therapists who have volunteered their time to be interviewed via email, and they provide so much amazing insight into our profession and career, and they answer pretty much the same questions that I had been asking on the Spill the OT podcast in season 1 and season 2. So we talk about salary, we talk about student loans, we talk about what people like, what they don't like, if they're experiencing burnout, we talk about what their productivity rates and expectations are from different facilities that they work in. So it's basically a written format of the podcast, but we have all new people that are being interviewed on there. So if you go to spilltheot.com and check out the blog, you will find that there. I also have a membership site. So in that membership, we have the OT party. It is a small party right now, but please come on over if you at all feel called. I will be putting up a new resource every single week, and the resources are going to be on a rotation. So we'll have pediatric resources 1 week, followed by an adult resource the next week, followed by something related to business or interview skills, social media the following week, and then something for our own mental health and just different ways that we can give back to ourselves, because sometimes we are so conditioned to give to our clients that a lot of us really benefit from reminders to take care of ourselves and help ourselves first, because you cannot pour from an empty cup. So I'm not trying to toot my own horn. Again, I hate the whole self-promotion thing. I wish I could just create and then somebody else would just be like, here, sell this. I wouldn't have to do that part of it, because I hate to self-promote. It's not really my jam. But I will say, if I was just a stranger and I knew what I had offered in this OT membership, it's something that I honestly would take advantage of. I am so proud of it. It is something I have literally poured my heart and soul into. So I'm very proud of it, and I give it my stamp of approval, I guess. Not that you need that, but I've put in so much time and so much energy to make this something that I'm proud of. So there are monthly and yearly memberships that you can sign up for, and all of that information is on spilltheot.com. Also, one thing I'm going to share, and I haven't really shared this on the podcast yet, but I don't even know how to begin. I am what I consider to be a fairly intuitive person. And by that, I mean, I don't like to use the word psychic because I feel like I'm not a full-blown psychic. But there's a lot of times where I get information or I get kind of a pretty good read on a different situation. Again, this is a gift that I think all of us have. I think all of us are very intuitive humans. It's just that some of us aren't quite as in touch with that as other people. Just because of life conditioning, you know, maybe you were a really intuitive child and then your family was like, ah, no, don't do that. And that's kind of what I experienced. But now that I'm older, trying to adult, I have really tried to open up that connection, and it's been a really remarkable spiritual journey. It makes me quite happy. But one thing I'm feeling very called to do is unlocking your life purpose. I feel like astrology is a great gateway into the more metaphysical side of life or the universe. I think it's something that's a little bit more concrete and tangible and makes things a little bit easier to understand. And there is so much that I believe is written in the stars, truly. So if this is something that at all interests you, I have astrological readings that are listed on the website. And for Spill the OT podcast listeners, you can get 50% off. Now, I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, so this is a very, very limited time offer. This is more just as I get started because I really do feel so called to do this type of work. And if you have ever been questioning kind of your life purpose as it pertains to your career and like, should I be a therapist? Is this what I want to do? I really want to help people with XYZ, but I'm not sure how to go or what to do. Is it aligning with what I really want and what I came here to do? If these are thoughts that cross your mind, then this might be something that you find really helpful. I know that when I was able to unlock my own life purpose, it was this huge aha, but it was also this huge like, oh yeah, yes, how could I forget? Like, it's so simple. So it just was a lot of validation. But if you are feeling like you want more answers just about who you are and why you chose to came here and what karmic lessons you were learning during this lifetime, if any of this language or information is appealing to you, then for you, my beautiful friend, for this limited time, again, I can't offer it long term, but for now, I am going to be offering them at 50% off just because I really do feel very called to do this type of work right now. Unfortunately, each reading does take a lot of energy out of me, so I'm only able to do one a day. So my scheduling is a little bit more limited, but let me know if you're interested. Shoot me an email and I will make sure that we get you booked and set up. Okay, so let's begin this interview. We are talking to one of my very favorite OTs. Her name is Angelica, and she is going to talk to us all about interviewing, and I hope that you enjoy. Could you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself? Like, what type of degree do you have and what makes you sparkle?
So my name is Angelica and I am an acute care therapist. I started in acute rehab as a new grad, and then I did PRN pretty much everywhere in subacute rehab, in acute care, and I dabbled a little bit with school, so in regards to teaching. Something that makes me sparkle. I really, really enjoy finding something that makes my patients excited and happy at the end of the session when they say, wow, like, this was really helpful, or wow, OT is super great because of A, B, and C. Like, I always look for somebody to find the value in occupational therapy, because as a therapist, I know the value, but I want to make sure I'm portraying it well. So I feel like that makes me sparkle. And just doing something that isn't easy to do. Sometimes I like to do splinting and different things like that. But the biggest thing that makes me sparkle is when a patient is really happy with the treatment and expresses why. Sorry, my degree is a master's of occupational therapy.
Excellent. So you've definitely worked in a couple of different settings. Today, we're kind of focusing on interviewing. I'm curious, have you ever had a role with interviewing process and what has that been like for you?
Sure. So when I was in acute rehab, I was lucky enough to be able to take part in a lot of different groups and committees. And one of those committees taught me how to do interviews. And then in the role that I was in my department, I was able to actually take part in a lot of interviews. And it was very interesting being on the side of the interviewer, because for so long I had interviewed for all my PRN positions. There was a portion of time where jobs were just so readily available that I was like, sure, I'll apply to that. And sure, I'll apply to that. And even though I had a connection and I was likely going to get the job, it was still an opportunity to interview. So when I got to be in that interviewer role, it was really interesting. The questions that I was educated to ask were the questions that I prep myself to be prepared to know how to answer going into an interview. So it's really cool being on both sides.
That's so cool. So I've interviewed for, I can't even imagine how many jobs at this point, because I've had a lot of jobs, but I've also interviewed for a lot of jobs and then either not been asked to work there or I declined, and I've interviewed at so many, but I never know what goes on in the background. Like, I'm always curious, what is the conversation like once I leave? Are they like, I know that sometimes they'll say that they're interviewing several different applicants, and I'm always like, I wonder, like, are they really, or are they saying this just to kind of have an excuse ready if they're not ready to hire me? So I have so many questions to ask you today.
Yeah, so bring them on. I'm excited. I definitely am excited for all these questions, because it is something that actually I am very passionate about, just because it's so cool to get the inner workings of what makes a interviewer special, what makes them pop. And it's really interesting to know that across the board, again, interviewing at so many different places, across the board, getting very similar questions. And then when going through kind of a program, a class to teach you how to do interviews, it was interesting the list of questions you received to have as a template or examples. You don't have to choose all of them, but you choose some of them, and they were all very similar.
Actually, that was one of my first questions, was how did your facility choose the panel of people to interview, and how did you guys choose the different questions to ask?
Sure. So every place that I have done interviews for or been interviewed at, there's always been a panel except for one place that I interviewed. And I think that was more of, it was like a one woman show. It was just that one manager, and she wasn't very inclusive to ask other people, but everybody else really works in groups. And the reason it's nice to work in groups is that everybody gets to pick a question. They may ask it a certain way. They may be looking for a certain answer themselves, and they may pick up different personality traits. So when you're looking to interview, I'm coming from a therapy background, but I've also talked to my husband, who is in another setting. He's an attorney, but he's interviewed at different settings. And while his questions may be catered slightly differently, there's an overarching theme, just like there is in the therapy world. And I just thought it was very interesting that by having multiple people, you would think, oh, could it be confusing? But it's really not. As an interviewee, it can be a little intimidating because you're sitting at a table and there's people surrounding you. For example, when I interviewed at my current position, I had been working there per diem, which is part-time, on the weekends. And when I went in for my full-time position interview, I thought, this is going to be no problem. I work with these people on the weekends, but boy, was I sweating. And I was prepared, but it's just having all those people around you. And I think it's good because it shows how a person will react in certain situations. You can prepare all you want for an interview, but just like you're interviewing me right now, I was so excited to say the things I want to say. And now as I'm talking, I'm like, oh, am I missing something? Am I not saying this or articulating this as well as I want. And that's how you feel in an interview. But I find that different people have different personalities, you know, type A, type B, everybody's different. So you need to, as the interviewee, address kind of everybody's concerns, or you can see people's faces and you're like, okay, I got that answer. People are typically looking for one answer. So I know I'm getting kind of off the topic that you initially asked, so I'll go back to that. But the way the panel is chosen is by having the people that are on the unit you're going to be working with, and then there's going to be the manager of that department and sometimes the senior of that department, and then at times they do include some employees. So maybe it's like if you're interviewing a CODA, maybe they want to have a CODA on board as well. If we're interviewing students to come on board, my facility interviews not just for jobs, but also for students to make sure the student is a good match. And the questions are very similar. It really works across the board, and it just depends on who you're interviewing and why. Like if they were interviewing managers, I would not be a part of that. But if you're interviewing other colleagues, you know, the same level, then you'll be including certain people that would understand what the questions are and be able to give good feedback if that person is a good candidate or not.
And do you have a uniform set of questions that you like to ask, or do you typically choose them on the fly depending on how that person is responding to the initial couple of questions?
Okay, so that's facility based. At my current job, they have a list of questions they like to ask, and we were able to, whoever was on the panel was able to edit it a little bit to add things that they felt were very helpful. So they just had, you know, their basic template. Now, the last position I was at, when I took the course or that class to teach you how to do interviews, we had a pamphlet of like 6 pages, and you could pick from that. So we got together at whoever was doing the interviews and said, okay, what questions are the most important? So we were able to choose our own questions there. But again, at my new facility, we go through a paper, and then if there's anything that is just, you're just dying to ask, there's not like, oh, you can't ask that because it wasn't on the list. You can ask, you can create your own question, but the templates are really nice because they really do cover the majority of questions.
So I'm jumping ahead for a second because I know for myself, when I interview, I tend to get kind of rambly and nervous, and they'll ask one question and then I end up throwing in answers that basically answer a lot of their future questions. And then I find myself saying like, okay, well, I know I already touched on this, and then kind of repeating the same answer. As being someone who's on the other side of that, do you notice that that's a theme that people tend to kind of ramble? And then what are your thoughts on that? And like, what's the conversation about that person later?
100%. So we're all human, so we know that that's going to happen. I feel like I'm doing that right now, and I try to bring back to the actual point. So what I always say is I'm truthful. You know, we're all human, and I feel like the more you show your real you and not try to hide behind trying to be this perfect person, the more that the people that are interviewing you are like, man, I really would like to work with this person. So you're trying to reach out to the people that you're interviewing with to show kind of how easygoing you are and how easy you are to get along with. So my tactic for that as an interviewee is to say, if they start saying something, not to try to pretend like you remember what was said. If you forgot what was said and you got off on a tangent, you could be like, I'm so sorry, I was so excited to answer that, and I just want to make sure I covered all the points that you asked in your original question. Do you mind repeating it? And I'm just upfront and I ask that. And as the interviewer, I really do appreciate when somebody asks that versus just talking, getting away from the point. While maybe it could be interesting, but who knows if the interviewers find it interesting. So I personally struggle with that myself. So I understand what the other person is, where they're coming from as well. I understand it's a stressful situation. Everybody is not as understanding. So when you ask a question, you're expecting a certain answer. I get excited, like you mentioned, and go off on a tangent, and then I end up answering questions that they have in the future. I feel like that is the responsibility of the interviewer. If you're a good interviewer, I feel like you, when you get to that next question, you don't just say it because it's on your paper. If it was answered, I personally am like, oh, the next question I was going to ask was already answered. I might mention it. If I feel like there's something extra they might be able to add, but if they answered it, I'll just quickly, briefly say, oh, you actually answered my next question, and then I move on to the next thing. I feel like as the interviewer, I feel like it's kind of difficult, just like it is for the person being interviewed. The interviewer has to really be on top of their game and know the questions on their list, especially when you're going around in a group. So one of the places that I interviewed people, people would just ask questions randomly as they wanted. And I felt like that worked. I mean, it was fine because you could read the room and see who was going to ask a question next. The place I work currently, actually, we all take turns. Each person asks a question. So that gives you opportunities to look down your list and see, oh, they already answered that. Oh, I'm going to rephrase this. You have that opportunity to look at that versus when you're just the one who's leading the interview or people are just asking questions randomly. You don't have that opportunity to really take in what was said, think about it, and then think about your next question. So I just think it comes down to the interviewer. Ultimately, if you're the one sitting there trying to get the job, it really doesn't matter if the interviewer does a bad job. It really depends on how you answer it. So I personally like to work on myself, and I try to do my best to provide the best setup questions and make it very streamlined so it's less stressful on the person being interviewed.
So would you say it's kind of fair to say that it's not so much what the person answers, but more how they answer so you can get insight into their personality? Or do you think you're looking more for like, do they know this clinical information?
So that's the thing. In interviews, many times you're not really asking too many clinical questions. It's more questions like, what is your strength and why? What's better asked, because it seems to throw people for a loop. And I remember it was like the number one question I thought about before going to interview, and it was 100% asked at every interview that I ever had. And that question was, what is your weakness and why? And the trick about that question, which everybody should really think about it, and you should think about life the same way, when you have to answer negative things and turn it into a positive. I feel like that's a big part of the therapy world. I don't know about you, but when in school, a big takeaway I had, and in my clinicals, a big takeaway I had was, regardless if a situation seems negative, you better find a way to document it into a positive. And I feel like it goes into that interview as well. You can always find a positive in any negative. So when somebody asked me what my weakness is, my thought was, okay, what can I work on that is the weakness for me, but I'm working on? Why might it be a good thing? So for example, for me, a weakness of mine is I care so much that maybe I spend a little too much time on one specific thing, catering to a patient that I really want to make sure they get their absolute best care, when in reality, they could still get good care and I could be a little bit freer in what I'm doing. So that's a weakness for me. But the positive is the patient is getting that extra education and that extra time. But for me, it's a weakness because there's productivity standards, there's everything that needs to be done. So I need to get back on track while still providing excellent care. So that's a perfect weakness that I just turned into a positive. And you should hold off your positive and say your weakness. I care so much, and sometimes it can take extra time, and then kind of see if they want you to answer how it's a positive. Just feel out the group. If you feel like you want to just throw in why that's a positive, like turn it into a positive, I say go for it, and you'll get brownie points for sure.
Have you ever interviewed someone and they told you something that was like really like a red flag or worrisome when you asked what their biggest weakness was, and everyone was like, ooh?
I've interviewed many people who said a weakness, but then really it was just a weakness, and they didn't really have a way to change it. I feel like interviewing people who have their doctors, masters, higher education, typically you get some kind of course in school on how to interview. I know we did it at our university. So I feel like that works in our favor versus if you were going to interview for your first job ever, like mine was at a produce stand. I'm sure they got random people who were interviewing for them that were answering wrong things. But in my experience, I've had pretty good people who have interviewed. It's just some people aren't as fluid, and you can tell might stumble, might be a little bit awkward. I'm not saying that's a negative thing, but just, you know, you can tell that they don't feel fully comfortable. And my thought process is, you go into if they're interviewing to be a therapist, they're going to be going into random people's rooms and trying to build rapport. And if they can't build rapport with me, who's going to be a colleague of theirs, then how am I supposed to expect that they would go into a patient room and be able to build that rapport with a stranger. So that personality that they bring out in the interview tells me a lot about how they may portray themselves in the patient's room.
That is really interesting. And I never thought of that. Like how you're presenting yourself in the interview is probably a good reflection of how you're going to be day to day and how you're going to be with your clients.
Correct. And especially like a big red flag would be if somebody came in, because, you know, I've heard people say, well, I have no weaknesses. If you think you have no weakness, then you are not reflecting on yourself very well. I have a ton of weaknesses. I have a ton of things I want to work towards. And the day that I don't have things to work towards, then I'm going to be dead, because there's always things that I can work towards and get better at regardless of my age, experience, anything. I don't care if I'm an expert in the field, the top of the field, I always have room to grow. And the day you become stagnant is a big red flag. So I think the people that come into the interview and say, well, I don't really have any weaknesses, or I never have trouble with coworkers, anything like that. Because another big question that we ask is, again, at multiple facilities and many interviews I've been interviewed in, they've asked, what is a challenge you have faced and how did you overcome it? And sometimes they'll phrase it in a situation of between coworkers. Sometimes they'll phrase it in your patient's room. And I feel like in your patient's room is way easier to answer than with coworkers, because you really have to think about like, ooh, I want to really reflect that I'm a great coworker, that I'm easy to work with, that I'm amenable to stuff. And as long as you show that you are open to change, you're open to feedback, being open to feedback is probably the most crucial thing. I have had students who have not been open to feedback, and I think that is probably the biggest crutch they have to not be open to hearing information. So I think if you are open to feedback, open to listening, you clearly show that you're easy to work with. And you need to reflect that in your interview.
I am so glad you said that, because I've been asked that question probably on every single interview I've done. And for some reason, I don't prep for it. I'm always like shocked that it's asked of me. And then I'm like stumbling to find an answer, and yet always asked of me. So I think it's great that you brought that up. And I like that the answer is basically to be a little vulnerable and show that you're flexible and willing to learn and grow.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't say it better.
Because I've seriously been asked that question every single time. And then literally, I always like am shocked by it. I'm like, oh, let me think about that. And then like, I get along with most people. So then it's hard for me to come up with one, because I've never had like a super big challenge. And then I usually will pull like a client where I felt like I wasn't able to help them enough. That's usually my go-to, is like, I feel like I get down on myself because I know that there was an answer. It's just that in that moment or with that patient, me and like even talking to PT or speech, we just weren't able to like get there with that client, and that kind of eats at me.
So that was what I was going to mention, is that you can come prepared for all the questions I regularly have. And then when you get into the situation, you're like creating this file in your brain of, does that work for this question? Does that? And you can always readjust it. If you said the same story in the interview twice, but change it for the situation, I personally, as the person being that was interviewing, would not find that as a negative thing. Because if you could see the changes, of course you'd rather hear two different stories. But if somebody's like, oh, you know what, speaking of that story, that also reminds me of this situation within that, I think that's totally fine. But you can prepare all you want. So the other thing I noticed that when I am interviewing and we ask that question, it stumps a lot of people. And I don't think it's because they're not prepared or they haven't thought about it, but it's okay. Pausing is okay. Like, you do not have to have all your ideas and just blurt it out. As the person interviewing, I much prefer you stop and think about what you want to say and think of an idea. And I've done that being interviewed, and I've respected that when I've interviewed people, just to stop and pause and say, you know what, let me think about that for a second. Because there's been a lot of situations that I can pull from, but I don't, you know, and just kind of run with it and be like, I just need a moment. And again, always saying, hey, can you repeat that last part of that? It's okay to ask that, because it is a very stressful situation. That's the ultimate thing, is interviews are stressful. As much as you can prepare, you will still find places where you're like, ooh, I know the answer to this, but I just need a moment to really gather my thoughts. And that's perfectly fine.
You know what it's making me think of? It's kind of like when you're taking the SATs in high school and your teachers prepare you by having you read certain stories that they know might be called upon for the SATs, and you don't know which, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, or you don't know what book is going to be used, but you've read them all and you have them all kind of like at your availability. It's making me think of that.
Yeah, I truly feel that you could take literally any story and create a positive from it and create a challenge from it. You can mold most situations you've been in into something that actually occurred. And even if it like occurred, it mostly occurred and you need to add one extra little detail to really home in on what the interviewer was asking, that's okay. What I also found was when I went out to interview for the first time, I remember as a new grad going and Googling interview questions. And I looked at the list that came up and that's what I read from. And then when I talked to my friends about what they were getting for questions, they were getting very similar stuff to what I Googled. And then when I went to take the class in one of the facilities I worked in, I found that majority of the questions that were online were also in this class. And I was like, wow, how cool that I could find the same questions and the consistent same questions throughout the years. And they don't really change because they're such strong questions. You have to think about what you're interviewing for. My husband once was interviewing for a position and they asked him what was his favorite TV show. Like totally off center, like you would never expect to get that in an interview, and he answered Family Guy, and the people were so impressed that he actually got the job because he answered Family Guy. And it's because it was such a random thing to choose. Most people try to choose something they felt like was a little bit more intellectual, Harry Potter, or just something that didn't seem like childish.
And like he chose The West Wing.
Yeah, like something like that, and like have this whole philosophical conversation about it. When people are interviewing, they just want to be talking to like a friend, a coworker, you know, even though it needs to be professional, you need to make sure that that person can jive with different types of people. And that was just such a cool response. Like I wouldn't even thought to say that. Like I was thinking if somebody asked me that, I really don't know. I mean, can I say The Real Housewives? No, just kidding. No, you have to think about what you can say in that situation. I really don't know what answer I would have given, but I thought it was cool hearing that people ask totally random questions like that. Speaking of that, I've had somebody in on the panel that I am on ask stuff like, what do you like doing in your free time? Do you have any pets? Because it just shows you a personal level of that person and takes you out of just thinking work, 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 and just lets you see kind of into their life. What are they interested in? Because if they say, I have no hobbies, like not saying that's a bad thing, but then also, what do you do with your free time? Is there anything that you're interested in? You know, it's good to like learn about that person and really see if you guys have common ground. So just knowing that when you go into an interview, regardless of the job you're going for, no questions off the table. But I have to say, regarding clinical questions, I expected as a new grad that all the questions be clinical, and they're really not. They might ask you about your level one, level two, what you do, but they're not going to be asking you, tell me all the muscles that are in your arm. They're not going to be asking you questions like that. They may just be asking like how much experience you have in this area, how comfortable do you feel, but they're not going to be asking very, very specific clinical questions, at least not in my experience. Unless you're applying for like a specialty position, you know, a hand therapist, or you're applying to be a manager of an outpatient facility, like I'm sure you get very specific questions there just to make sure that you know you can fulfill the job. But as a therapist, if you complete your clinicals, what area of practice do you feel comfortable with? Those are the general questions that'll be asked. You won't be getting specific treatment. What would you do in this treatment situation?
Yeah, I think that's actually really important to say because it takes a lot of pressure off of people. So you don't really have to prep all of that clinical stuff. Like be familiar with the setting, of course. And I think at the end of the day, if you just express that you're open to learning, you're eager to learn, I feel like that is a better indicator of how you're going to be versus like, what have you memorized for this one interview?
Correct.
Do you have any favorite questions that you like to ask people on an interview that you feel are really telling of their personality?
I honestly like the challenge question. What situation have you been in that has challenged you between coworkers? I like the coworker question because as a therapist, we're always going to think of that challenging patient, what you did. And I feel like that's such an easy answer to give. I mean, every day I have a challenging patient. And you know, my philosophy is always, how am I going to make this person see the value in therapy? How am I going to make this person smile? Because it's not about me, it's about them. But when it gets to coworkers, you know, it's harder to say that because you're not there for your coworkers, you're there for your patients. So it's very interesting to just see the wheels spinning and see what kind of stories people come up with, because I felt like that was my most challenging question to ask. That I was asked in an interview, so I feel like because it was so challenging for me, but also so enlightening, I love to ask that question.
All right, everybody, stay tuned for part two. That will be released in 2 weeks from now on Fridays, and I hope that you all have a beautiful week. Please follow me on Instagram, spill_the_OT. You can email me at spilltheot@gmail.com. I'm on YouTube and TikTok and the website, spilltheot.com. Have a great week, and sending you lots of love and